There was once in the old country a town called Constantine. And in Constantine, there were Hasidim living there. And one of the Hasidim was named Reb Aharon. Now, Reb Aharon was very quiet. The other Hasidim didn't know too much about him as far as how good he could learn or what he really did all the time. All they knew was he was poor. But they also knew that he was an eunuch from the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov had a son named Tzvi. Tzvi had a son named Aharon, and this is the Aharon that we're talking about. And Aharon kept very quiet to himself. He would daven for a long time. The other Hasidim would, after davening, they also daven nicely. They would go to the table after they davened, and after they learned, they would put out some mashke. They would make l'chaim, they would fabreng, they would say divrei teda, and Reb Aharon, the whole time, was still davening. That's one thing he did. And after his davening, he sat down to learn. He didn't even eat anything. First of all, he was so much into his learning and davening, he probably didn't even feel himself that he has to eat because he's more interested in davening and learning. But also, he was very poor. He probably didn't have even money to buy bread sometimes. Now, these Hasidim had the Rebbe, and his name was the Mezritcher Maggid. He was the Rebbe after the Baal Shem Tov. The Baal Shem Tov had already gone to Gan Eden, and these Hasidim who lived in Constantine were Hasidim of the Baal Shem Tov. Once in a while, they would get together and go on a wagon, and they would travel to Mezritch, to the Maggid, the Rebbe. Now, you go in the wagon, how do you sit in the wagon? Like in a car, you know, there's places that you like to have more, and there are places that you like to have less. Some kids don't like to sit in the back of the car. They like to sit in the front or by the side, by the window, whatever. Everybody knows their favorite places, and their places that are not so favorite. Now, now, the Elter Chassidim, the older Chassidim, and also they were usually the bigger Talmidei Chachamim and the greater Tzadikim of the Chassidim. I mean the special Chassidim. They would sit in the better places. And, you know, the regular Chassidim or the younger Chassidim who want to give covet, they want to give honor to the older Chassidim or the bigger Talmidei Chachamim, they sat in the other places. Now, since they knew that Reb Aharon was an eunuch from the Baal Shem Tov, that means he's got a very special yichus. His family that he comes from is very special. Just like we, everybody here is from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Everybody's a yid. We have a special family. Because of that, we have schus avos. We have a bracha because we come from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So to be from a special family makes you also special. Reb Aharon, they knew, was an eunuch from the Baal Shem Tov. He was special. They wanted to give him a special place. He never took a special place. He didn't want anybody to make a big deal out of him. He sat next to the wagon driver, next to the goy. He didn't even sit in the part that other Hasidim sat in. He sat by himself next to the wagon driver because nobody wanted to sit there, Bechlal, because it was outside of the wagon, just with the goy. Reb Aharon sat there. That's where he wanted to sit. Because, as we see, Reb Aharon held himself to be low. He didn't want anybody to make a big deal out of himself. Now, this went on, and one day the Hasidim were going, one day the Hasidim, after davening, they were sitting by the table in the shul, making l'chaim, for bringing, singing a few nigunim, saying the words of Teda and Chassidus. And Reb Aharon is in the corner over there davening by himself. And one of the chassidim said, Aaron, why don't you join us? Why don't you come to the table with everybody else? What do you have to make yourself to be by yourself and daven longer than everybody else? And Reb Aaron didn't even answer him. Didn't even turn around. And another chassid said, listen, maybe Aaron, maybe he thinks himself to be like a malach. Maybe he thinks himself to be higher than everybody else. He doesn't want to be with us. In fact, maybe he wants to become a Rebbe because he's acting like a bigger tzaddik than everybody else. He's acting like a bigger halak tzaddik more than everyone else. Now, this chassid did not mean chas v'shalom to talk lashon hara or to be mean. They were actually concerned that Reb Aaron is maybe going off the right derech. He's going off the right way. You know, some people don't learn in daven. Some people don't do mitzvahs. So they're off on the wrong way. They're not on the way of Hashem. They're not doing the way that Hashem wants. But there are other people, they're keeping Torah mitzvahs, but sometimes they learn too much, they daven too much, they don't take care of their eating and drinking and their clothes and their house, they don't take care sometimes of their health. And if they overdo, if they do just learning and davening the whole day, they don't go to work, they don't make money for their families, this could also be going off in the wrong way. Of course, it depends who it is. And they felt that Aaron was going off on the wrong way because they felt he was too much learning, too much davening, too much by himself. And they were worried that like something was not right up in his head. And they were concerned out of love for him. And the next time they traveled to the Magid, Reb Aaron sat in the wagon next to the goy. The chassidim in the wagon were talking that when we get to the Magid, we're going to tell the Magid what Reb Aaron is doing. And for sure, the Magid would probably also tell him off and tell him just to be like everybody else, you know? Everybody else sits down to make l'chaim. Sit down to make l'chaim. Everyone else davens a nice davening. We're not talking about people that raced through the davening or skipped or were mishkababbling their words or something. We're talking about chassidim that daven with kavana. And they learn Chassidus before they davened. And they learn Torah after they davened. And they wanted to serve Hashem with their whole heart. And Aaron was just doing more than everybody else. So they thought the Magid is going to tell Aaron, you know, be like everyone else. Don't make yourself special. And now they go to the Magid. And the Chassidim were together with the Magid at one time during that visit. And they started to complain about Aaron, Reb Aaron, and the way he's acting. And the Magid all of a sudden said, don't start up with Reb Aaron. You should know he's an Ish Kadosh. He's a Heilige Mensch. Ah. When they saw that the Magid had actually gone for the side of Aaron and said what he was doing was fine. And he's a halakha person. The Magid didn't just go and say about anybody that he's a halakha person. And in fact, to go, that the Magid should go and give a praise about somebody was not a thing that usually happened. If he said a good word for somebody like that, you knew that it was emes and it was special. And the Chassidim had a tremendous big respect for Reb Aaron now. That the Rebbe had said he's an Ish Kadosh, he's a Halakha person. The Rebbe called him Halak. And now, Kinalach, on the way back, not only they decided to leave him alone and let him learn in Davin, and they're not going to Chas V'Shalom say anything about him that he's going off in the wrong way, they wanted to give him the best seat on the wagon. Because number one, he is a grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. He's the son of the son of the Baal Shem Tov. Mamish, a direct ainikel. And number two, the Magid said he's an Ish Kadosh. He's a halakha person. Halak means he's connected with Hashem. Specially connected with Hashem. That means Halak. They wanted to give him the best place in the wagon. He would not hear of it. He wanted to sit next to the goy like everyone else. I'm sorry. He would not hear of it. He wanted to sit next to the goy like every other time. And the chassidim felt bad that such a special person has to do that. So they wanted to make a trick. In the wagon, as they were going, they said like this: the next time we stop for the horses to get water, and the horses should have something to eat, and usually we get out of the wagon and just walk around a little bit to get some air, and they would stop along the way here and there. So this time, we're all going to get back to the wagon first, before Reb Aharon, and one of us is going to sit next to the goy, and everyone else will get in a different place, and the best place in the wagon is going to be the only open place. So Reb Aharon is going to have no choice, but he's going to have to end up sitting there, otherwise he's not going to have a place in the wagon at all. And it's too far to walk home. So with this trick, they're going to make him to sit in the good place in the wagon. The next time the wagon stopped, this is exactly what they did. They all got out, but instead of spending 5 or 10 minutes, they spent like 1 minute. They ran back to the wagon. They got in their places. One of them sat next to the goy. And by the time Reb Aharon got back, he saw there was no place to sit except in the best place. And he didn't want to sit there. But nobody would move. They did not move. And he had no choice but to sit there in the wagon in the best place. Now you might think that he had the best place, he's going to feel so good about it. He felt very bad, because Reb Aharon could not stand that people should make a big tzimis out of him. He did not want that people should make a big deal out of him, to give him kavod. And the whole time on the way, it looked like he was saying tilim, but he wasn't saying tilim. He was davening to Hashem that they should forget about him. They should forget what the Maggid said. They should leave him alone, and nobody should make a big deal out of him at all. He was davening to Hashem the words the Maggid said. They should forget about him completely. And sure enough, by the time they got back home, and he came to the shul the next day, nobody treated him special. They had completely forgotten all about what the Maggid said. And again, they just treated like he's off on the wrong way, and sometimes they would say, Reb Aharon, come with us, what are you doing? And he didn't answer them, and that's the way they went. That's the way it went. Now, in that time, Reb Aharon was living with his wife and his kids in a house, a little broken house. But even that little broken house, he had to pay the owner of the house, he had to pay him money once in a while to be able to live in that house, to pay rent. And even that little bit of money that he had to pay once in a while, he was so poor, he could not come up with that money. Until the owner of the house lost his patience, and he told Reb Aharon, okay, if you don't pay me the money, you have to leave the house. Sure enough, Reb Aharon was not going to put up a big fight. He and his family, his wife and his little kiddies, they packed up their things, whatever they had, which was hardly anything. They went out into the street with no place to live. The kiddies asked Tati, Tati, where are we going to live? Now we don't have a house. We have no place to live now. Reb Aharon said, I know where we're going to go. Follow me. They walked down the road, past the shul, past the houses. They went out into the forest, and outside of the town was a broken down house called a churban, a destroyed, fallen down house that nobody had lived in this house for many years because it was all broken. It had completely fallen down in most places, and a few places were still standing in the house. And nobody even went near the place because they said the shin dalads over there, and they were afraid. And Reb Aharon told his family, this is where we're going to have to live, because we have no place to go. in the broken down house in the forest that people don't even go near it. They're afraid because there's shin dalins there. And now Reb Aharon and his family came to the Chorbin, the broken down house. And before they went in, Reb Aharon told his family this. We have to make up amongst us that we'll never leave anyone alone from our family in the new house in the Chorbin. Always there has to be at least two of us together. And if there's three of us or all of us, it's much better. But never, never should be ever only one of us alone. And right away the kiddies asked, Tati, why? They just wanted to know, and his wife asked why. He says, it says in the Torah that if there's shin dalits and a person goes by himself, the shin dalit can hurt chas v'shalom the person. That's why nobody goes into a broken down building or broken down house by themselves, because it says there's shin dalits that could be there and they could hurt one person. But if there's two people, it says the shin dalits will not hurt two people. They will show themselves to the two people and try to scare them. And if a person might see a shin dalit, he might get scared, but they will not hurt if there's two people. They will show themselves, and the two people might see a shin dalit, but they will not get hurt. And if there's three people, the shin dalit will not even show himself. Not his nose, and not his eye, and not his ear, and nothing. Not even his toe, and nothing at all. He won't show anything. You won't even be able to see him. So if there's three of us, and if there's all of us, we have nothing to fear from the shin dalits. If there's two of us, okay. We might see one of his, we might see a shin dalit or something, but don't worry about it, it's not going to hurt us. I've taught you kiddies only to be afraid from Hashem, and not afraid of anyone else, so don't worry about it. But if there's one of us, then it's not good to be near or inside of a Chorban. Okay? And this is what they made up. And so, Kinalach, they lived in the Chorban, they lived in the broken down house, and people found out they're living in the broken down house. They felt sorry for them. And of course they talked about it. How can a family live in a broken down house? But nobody really helped them. Nobody really did anything about it. Probably the other people were poor themselves. But they didn't think too much about it. People are busy. They didn't really think too much about it. And now, kiddies, this is what happened. When they moved into the Chorbin, Reb Aharon's wife was expecting a baby. She was pregnant. Finally, it came time, one night, she started feeling that she's going into labor. That means she feels in herself that the baby is going to be born soon. And as we know, when mommy is going to have a baby, she goes to the hospital. And over there are the doctors and the nurses or the midwives, people to help having the baby. You just don't have a baby by yourself. You need somebody to help out. In those days, and sometimes even in these days, the women had the baby usually at home in their house, and they called a midwife who's a woman who knows how to deliver a baby. She's like a woman doctor for a baby. They would call the midwife and she would come and help the woman to deliver the baby in the house. Now, was a problem. Reb Aharon and his family lived in the Chorbin. It's in the forest. It's at night. And now the midwife lives in the town. Reb Aharon will have to leave his family to get the midwife. He does not want to leave his wife alone in the Chorbin. And she asked him, but didn't you say if there's more than two people, even if there's two people, we don't have to be afraid of the Shindalids. And if there's three people, so for sure, they're not even going to show themselves. So with me, together with the kids, it's more than three. But Reb Aaron said, first of all, they're little kids. And second of all, it says in the Torah that a woman that's going to give birth needs a special shmira, a special guarding. As we know, certain times, Kinalach, in times of special halakhit, the person that has a special thing that's going to happen to them needs a special protection, a shmira. For example, let's take a little baby. The night before the bris, you know what the tati does before the baby has the bris? The tati has a vachnacht. He stays up the whole night learning Torah as a special protection for the baby. Because it says the Yetzirah wants to make trouble. He knows there's going to be a bris milah, which is so halik. And he wants to make chas v'sholem some kind of trouble for the baby. So the tati stays up the whole night and he's learning Torah to protect the baby. A chosen and a kala, the week before they get married, when they're walking around somewhere, they go with a shomer. Or the kala goes with a shomeres, a lady who's watching her, a girl. They don't go alone because this is a shmira. And even the week after the chasana, during the sheva brachas, they don't go without a shomer. Because it's such a halakha thing to get married. It's a very halakha thing. When a woman is going to have a baby, a new neshama is going to come into the world, a new yid is going to be born. It's so halik. Reb Aaron did not want to leave his wife in the Chorbin because she needs a special shmira. What's he going to do? For him to go alone into the forest at night near the Chorbin, he can't, it's too dangerous. To stay home, he can't do that either because his wife is going to have a baby. He has to call the midwife. How can he stay home? What's he going to do? I'll tell you what he did. A very surprising thing, but this is what the story says. He picked up his wife on his shoulders and he carried her all the way to the city, all the way to the town, that she should not be alone in the Chorbin, and he's got to call the midwife. He carried his wife all the way to the town, and he went to the house of the midwife, and he knocked on the door, and he says, "My wife is going to have a baby. Please come and help." "Well, why are you carrying your wife on your shoulders?" And he told her why. "So why doesn't she have the baby here in my house? I don't want to leave the kids alone more in our house, in our Chorbin. So please come with us." And now Reb Aaron carries his wife all the way back to the Chorbin, and the midwife comes. And now she gets ready to deliver the baby that's going to be born soon. But she needs certain things. She says, "Bring me a pot so we can boil water." Reb Aaron says, "I'm sorry, we don't have a pot." "Well, wait a minute. You have to have something to cook water in, and we need wood for a fire." "Well, we don't have any wood." "Well, we need sheets, we need something to help to wrap the baby in, some towels, some blankets. We need certain things." "No, we don't have any sheets or towels or blankets." They were so poor. They just didn't have the simplest things that people have. How can I deliver a baby if there's nothing? If we don't have anything? Now she says, "I have to go home and get certain things. I have to go home." Reb Aaron says, "You can't go home because we don't want to let you walk alone through the forest because you're by a Chorbin." "Well, how am I going to get home? How will I get anything?" They tried to figure out. For him to carry his wife again, together with the midwife, the wife is already in labor. He's not going to carry her now, the way she's in labor now, through the forest. So they figure out the best way is one of the little kids will go with the midwife through the forest, and the midwife, that will be enough of a shmira for both of them, two people together, and they'll go to the town and get the things needed and come back. And that's what they did. The midwife went home, she got the things needed, she came back, and shortly after that, Reb Aaron's wife had a little baby. But kenelach, when the midwife looked around the house, she didn't see things for the baby that could be used, like a crib, blankets, stretchies, things that you need for the baby. Because Reb Aaron and his wife and his family were so poor, they didn't have. And the midwife, the next morning, she went into the shul as the men were davening shachris. The chassidim were davening in the shul. And she starts screaming. She says, "You chassidim, you yidden that are davening to Hashem, don't you know what's going on in your own town with your own people? You don't know what's going on? How can you stand there and daven to Hashem and ask Him to give you what you need and ask Him to give you brachas when you're not helping out another yid?" And the chassidim turned around. What's happening? This woman is screaming. Of course, they know she's a fine woman. She's the midwife. She has Yirah Shemayim. She's not stam screaming. It must be important. And she starts telling them, Reb Aaron, who lives in the Chorben, his wife just had a baby. They have nothing. Who's going to help them? They're so poor. Nobody thinks about them to help them. Nobody knows what's going on in their house. And the Chassidim quickly finished their davening. And they said, "Oi, we'll get money, we'll get things. We'll get things for the baby, we'll get things for the mommy." And they started remembering how Reb Aaron is a halakha person. Like the Magid said, he's an Ish Kadosh. And they start saying, "Oi, we never helped him out. We never did anything for him. We let him live in a churban with his family, and they have nothing, and he's such a special person. How could this be?" And they quickly ran, and they brought baby things that they had. Or they brought money, and they brought food, they brought different things to the midwife that she should take it to Reb Aaron. And the midwife says, "Okay, I'll take this, and it'll be good for a while, but what's going to be after that? Who's going to take care of that baby and that family after these things are used up?" Oh, and the chassidim said, "Oh, you know what? Each week we'll get money together and we'll make sure that we're going to take care of him and everything is going to be fine, don't worry. And maybe we'll find him a better place to live." And the woman took the things the chassidim gave her and they went around, she went around even other places in the town gathering more things. And she took it to Reb Aaron and his wife in the churban to help the little baby and to help the family. And the chassidim, about 5 minutes later, after she left, they completely forgot about what happened. They forgot about Reb Aaron. They forgot about his family, about his baby, because Reb Aaron, as I told you, had davened that they should not remember at all that he's special. They shouldn't even think about him. They should just leave him alone. They completely forgot about it. And in fact, after they got done learning, and they got done saying L'chaim a little bit, and giving each other a brache, as they usually did, they started saying, "Wasn't there something we were supposed to do? Yeah, didn't something happen today? We were supposed to like take care of something important and do something?" And another one said, "Yeah, I seem to remember, like we all were supposed to do something after the learning, after the davening. In fact, we were supposed to even rush as fast as we could to do that thing. What was it? No, I don't know. Do you remember anything?" "I don't remember anything." They completely forgot. They were just scratching their heads. And now, kinelach, Reb Aaron and his family lived in the churban still with their little baby. And each morning, the little boys would walk to the cheder, to the yeshiva, to the Rebbe's house. In those days, there was no yeshiva building. They went to the Rebbe's house, and the Rebbe let the kinelach into the house, and they learned usually in their Rebbe's house. But kinelach was very sad. The Rebbe himself was very poor, each parent sent money every week or so for their child to be able to learn Torah with the Rebbe. They had to pay. And the Rebbe was living from that money. And the Rebbe sometimes took less money if the parents were poor. But the Rebbe himself could not just teach a child for free, even if he wanted to, because the Rebbe himself needed money to live. Now, Kinalach, for a few weeks, Reb Aaron's sons came to the little cheder, and they never brought money. And the Rebbe understood that Reb Aaron was very poor, and he let it go for week after week. But finally, one day, he got upset. Maybe he was a little bit nervous. And when the boys came in the morning to learn with their Rebbe, he said, "I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to send you home." And he sent them home because they could not pay anything to learn. Not even anything, not even a penny. And they came walking back to their little churban house in the forest, and Reb Aaron was there. "Why are you coming back? You're supposed to be in yeshiva." "Our rabbi doesn't let us in because we don't have any money to pay." And Reb Aaron felt so bad. "Oy vey, my kinderlach will not know how to learn. They won't know how to daven. They won't know how to read. They won't know Torah. They won't know mitzvahs. Oh, that's terrible." And he sat down and cried. And he said to himself, to be a poor man living in the churban, in the middle of the forest, this somehow I can take.